Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. This is the podcast where we talk to entrepreneurs, mostly product entrepreneurs, on how they started the business, how they grew it, how they went from their initial idea to finally have an impact on the world building a successful company. And today we're super excited to have Todd Steinberg. He's the owner and founder of Plush in a Rush. He's in Dallas, Texas. And Plush in a Rush is a designer and distributor of plush toys, but he also has other businesses, a line of children's books and a couple of other things. So look forward to learning more about that. So without further ado, please welcome Todd to the podcast.
All right. Thanks, Henrik.
We're super excited to have you. Before we go into the business stuff, though, please tell us a little more about yourself. We know you live in Dallas. What do you do when you don't work? Do you play with plush toys or do you have other hobbies?
Yeah, it's one of those things where, no, I don't play with plush toys at home, just like my friend who's a district attorney. He doesn't watch Breaking Bad or any of the shows revolving around crimes. He's like, I've had enough of that all day long. But yeah, I've lived in Dallas all my life and I'm married about 11 years now, two kids. And I just enjoy, being of service to others, but also I don't consider it work, but I love writing. And like you mentioned, I have a line of children's books. And then also I have a graphic novel that I self-publish that is going to be picked up by Macmillan to be distributed next year. And they're hopeful that it might be turned into a TV series at some point, but that's all down the line. So I might be one of those hybrid plush toy makers / showrunners. Who knows? Yeah. Very rare.
It's a small group. Well, that's super exciting. I've always loved writing my whole life and started and not finished several books and wrote a couple of screenplays too. So I'm jealous that you've gotten it to that point.
Yeah, it's fun. It keeps your creative mind going. And just like anything, what you learn in one field, you can use in another. Yeah. So this idea of building a story, you can basically turn your business into a canvas or to a blank set of pages that you can write upon or paint upon and create a brand that tells a story, which is what we try to aim for.
Yeah. That's great. Is the graphic novel available?
It's called Don't Tell My Wife I'm a Cult Leader.
Don't tell my wife. All right.
Yeah. And it's set in the mid 90s, so it's a bit of nostalgia, but it's basically told from a middle-aged guy who is surrounded by the police. He only has a few minutes to spare and he wants to tell his side of the story, which begins in the year 1994. So it kind of goes through his whole saga and how he came to be surrounded by the state authorities with his butt on the chopping block. So it's a fun tale of him meeting others who come into his orbit and how he kind of leans into the hate, if you will.
I got to check it out for sure. Sounds awesome. All right. So let's go back to the early days. You went to school in the Dallas area, I think, and then didn't start entrepreneurship right away, I don't think, but pretty shortly thereafter. Can you tell us about, you know, those first couple of years in your career and then how you decided to become an entrepreneur?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I didn't choose the gangster life. The gangster life chose me. So my dad and my uncle have always been on their own their whole adult life. And they had started, they were basically sales reps, independent sales reps back when there might have been Walmart and Kmart and Target, but those were all small regional players. Hmm. So they were able to build a following with like regional mass merchandisers and selling housewares and whatnot. And then as the 90s came about, there was more consolidation. They wanted to get rid of the middlemen. And so they started losing lines. And then one of their lines was a plush toy company called Fiesta. And they kept on raising the minimums. And they were like, hey, you keep on raising the minimums, but our customers are florists. Can't you just lower it for them? And they were like, no, but tell you what, how about we give you a $50,000 line of credit and you can buy the plush toys from us at a distributor price, and then you can break up the stuff however way you want it. So they're like, all right, let's give that a try. And they opened up a warehouse and just had that line of credit. And as they went around, they got to meet other suppliers and took on other lines and whatnot. And then I came about, gosh, in the early 2000s, they had been in business about 8 years, but literally early 2000s, the internet e-commerce was kind of a neologism. And all they did was take their duffel bags and find a Yellow Pages. And when they went into a small town, they would open up the Yellow Pages, find the florists or gift shops, go in there and show them samples. And then they would write up the order and fax it back to the warehouse, and
That's
someone there
awesome.
would send it off. So they actually type, handwrote the orders, and then my mom would actually type the UPS the labels. And so it was all
Wow.
very, very manual. They took checks and whatnot. And when I came in, I was like, all right, we need to have a logo, build a website, and do a lot of other things. I spent a year in advertising at a big advertising firm here in Dallas. And then I spent a year in pharmaceutical marketing. And then when I quit there, my dad was just like, well, why don't you come on board, and we're getting older and all that, and see what you can do. And if it doesn't work out, I'll be the first to tell you. So I got us started with a website. I built it using something called Monster Commerce, which was
All
subsequently
right.
bought by one of the big companies, Web. Can't remember the name of it. It'll come to me later. But they were bought out. And initially, Monster Commerce was like, yes, we're selling out, but don't worry, nothing will change. And I was like, cool. But then 10 years later, nothing changed. And so at first it was a good thing, but then it became a negative. And then we switched to Shopify and really upped our email marketing and decided to really focus on relationship building, because we could know, it's one thing to go door to door, build a relationship with the customers, but how many are you going to see? So was there a way to replicate that human touch, but on the internet? And that's what I always try to do, is that I try to put what we call high tech, but high touch, where we put in physical gifts. Like we have little pens that are in the shape of a teddy bear, and something like this, but it's just a cute little bear that we put in there. And we'll get a couple thousand pens, put it in with every order, and then before too long, people are like, hey, I'm okay on teddy bears, but we're fighting over that one pen you sent us. Can you send us another one? And then we developed a calendar where we use pictures of teddy bears. And even in like mid-November, someone was like, hey, are you going to send out calendars again? I just need to know if I need to get a new one or not. And I was like, okay, I guess people like our stuff. If they're fighting
That's
over our
awesome.
pens and asking us 2 months in advance where our calendars are, we're doing
Yeah.
okay.
Well, that's such a beautiful you learned from, I think it's fair to say you learned from your dad and his business partner and how to build the relationships and then took that into the digital world. That's a beautiful thing. But if we go back to those early years, can you tell me how was that going to work for your dad? And what
Yeah.
did you guys Did you buy into the company or did you inherit it or how
Yeah,
did
a
you
little
guys
bit of
structure that?
both. Basically, my dad and uncle just brought me in as an employee. And
Okay.
then my dad passed away about 10 years ago and willed me his side of the business. So it was just me and my uncle. My uncle's 78. He's nearing to retire. But so that's another, story for another time. But we handle the stuff pretty well together. But when I first started, I really didn't like it, because I love my dad, but working with him is a different
It's a
thing.
different thing,
And when it was always two against one. So I would have these ideas. I have to fight twice as hard to convince both of them, because they both had their reservations. And then after my dad passed away, all right, it was like, okay, now it's just me and you. It's a little bit easier to try new things, give discounts, try loyalty programs. And we, for every 10 things that we tried, seven were really good, and a couple were marginal, and one might have been a bomb. But it's always been a fun thing just to experiment, see what works. And that's what's great about being the boss, is that you can you reap all the benefits and you take all the responsibilities. So you're very careful about what you try, and you monitor it a lot more closely and come to a decision a lot more quickly than if you were just someone, third or fourth ring under.
And it sounds like you have maybe more products early on, and then, when did you narrow down and just become Plush in a Rush, or was it always Plush in a Rush?
Yeah, when they started their little distributorship, it was always plush toys. And the focus, because we're in Texas, and if you go to a small town in Texas, like if you go to outside of Austin, they have one thing in common. So it might be a town of 10,000. They might have 50 churches, but only one football team. So the football team is a lot more unifying than the church, because everyone has their differences, but the football team, they can all get around. So like Borger, Texas, population 10,000 in West Texas, you roll in there, it says, "Welcome to Borger, Texas, home of the Bulldogs." You have paw prints everywhere. And so when you're going into a town what the high school mascot is, you go into the florist with a teddy bear and a bulldog. And then if you come in with a bulldog, they're going to want to talk to you. So they got like a little coaches directory, and the coaches directory had each town's mascot, and then also how many high schools were in the town. And if there was one high school in a town and it was like a population 8 to 15,000, then you knew that they were going to go crazy for their mascot. And so mascots were big, and then teddy bears, and of course Valentine's Day. But I would say that the biggest thing that we did that has been a huge success for us is custom printing t-shirts for the teddy bears and custom printing bandanas for the items that don't sit like a teddy bear. And we became huge with like a new market, which was dance studios, that they always give out a product at the end of the year for their recital. And it's always a fancy bear with a shirt that shows the recital's name on it or what
Got
have
it. So
you.
the bear is wearing the t-shirt. These are not human t-shirts. They're
That's
real
right.
t-shirts for the bears. And you make those separately from the bear and dress them, or just all manufactured somewhere?
No, it's all the shirts are all done overseas, as are the bears, but then the t-shirts are printed here. And so it's a very quick turnaround, and it's basically what they call just a heat transfer, basically dye sublimation. So you print it on a special printer, you put it on a press, and then 2 minutes later you can have a teddy bear wearing a t-shirt. And it's been a great thing for us, because it's relatively cheap to get in these blank t-shirts. It doesn't take too much effort to make them. And then we're still priced better than a lot of our competition. And the competition might be like, you can only have one color and we need 6 weeks. It's like, hey, you can have it in 2 to 3 days if you want to pay an upcharge kind of
Got
thing.
it. So you have inventory of bears in different colors, and then t-shirts, and then you can combine them into something that's specific for that high
That's
school
right.
or business, whatever it is.
Yeah, we have three different size shirts, three different size bandanas, so you can mix and match. If you wanted to put a bandana on a panther, you can do that. We even got little tiny bandanas for these little 5-inch mascots. So if you wanted to get a raccoon with your school's mascot on it, you could do that too. So we've and then the only thing we haven't done is gotten t-shirts or bandanas in any other color other than white. It's like what Henry Ford said, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. For us, it's white, and we have thought about bringing in different colors, but then you'd have to get a new printer, something that can print white ink, and you go from a $2,000 printer to like a $12,000 printer. Like, you know what? If they don't want a white bandana, then they can go somewhere else.
And you do all this. You have a small printing shop there, or I don't know how small it is,
Yeah,
but
we have, a pretty sizable warehouse, pretty big office space. This is my office slash, photo studio here. And we have a little print house. We print it on the printer, and then we have a paper cutter. You can get like 60 decals on one sheet of paper, and then you cut and slice, and you can put about six or seven on the heat press and be done lickety split.
And how big is the operation there? You have a team of employees, so there's a contractor, sure.
We have four people in the back, and then my uncle, and then a couple of front of the house folks. And then we utilize a friend of mine. He does graphic design, so he'll actually do all the setup for the t-shirts. We'll send him the logo, or he gets notified when there's a new custom order. He grabs the logo from what they uploaded and then sends it in the right size and whether or not it needs to be rushed or if it needs to be dressed or that kind of thing.
And is most of your business B2B that you sell to other
Yeah,
businesses that
it's
then
all
resell?
B2B. We have a $150 minimum. It's funny, we were thinking about let's try Amazon, let's see how that goes. And we went to a Klaviyo conference. This was in, I think it was 2018 or 2019. It was before COVID. And the theme of their talk was own your marketing or something to that effect. And the keynote talked, it was like a shaving company. And he said that they had their website and they had their Amazon line, and that the Amazon was being handled by a third party and they decided to bring it in-house. So they shut down their Amazon channel while they trained their in-house. But they noticed by the time they were about ready to relaunch their Amazon, their sales went up exponentially because the fan base that they had built on Amazon said, no, I want this product. I'll find them on their website. And when they went to their website, so with a, if they bought the beard oil, they're going to buy the razor, not someone else's razor. They're going to buy their own shaving cream and not someone else's conditioner. So their average order value went up, and then they were able to market to them directly, email them, thank them for the order, send them coupons and all that kind of thing. I was like, okay, no, we're not doing Amazon. We're just going to stick with what we got and just handle it B2B.
Yeah, makes sense. It's there's so many people that try to do that. And I think there's a lot of gurus out there, trying to convince people that it's so easy on Amazon. And maybe it was 5 years ago, but now it's a pretty crowded marketplace, I think. And it's harder. It's much harder today than it was a few years ago. So I think
Yeah.
to find a niche like you guys have and just dominate that niche is powerful. And then you own your own channel too. You're not dependent on some third-party marketplace that could change the rules or their algorithms overnight, and then suddenly your business
Yeah, and
could be.
the one thing we're thankful for is that back when I first launched the website, you have to bring traffic to it, and it was great because the advertising was like 1 cent per click, 2 cents per click. Sometimes if I felt like I really wanted a keyword, I might bid up all the way up to 3 cents a click, you know, just to really put out my money. And I also, it was very easy to optimize the website for search results. And, you know, crossing our fingers, we've been like the top search result for wholesale teddy bears, wholesale plush, wholesale stuffed animals for like 20 years. And it's not coming down. And even companies much bigger than us, when we buy from them, they're like, how do you get so high on the organic listings? We've been trying to, you know, we just keep on bending our pickaxe on that thing. And I was like, we just started early. It's like buying real estate in Manhattan in 1910 versus 2010. It's just going to be a lot cheaper, and the thing that you buy is going to be worth a lot more. So we're very fortunate that we started way back then. Otherwise, we'd be spending a lot more money on pay-per-clicks and other forms of advertising.
And it looks like what's going on your website that you launched a bunch of different animals or plush characters. How is that going? Is the bear still the
The bear is still
bestsellers
the
or are
king.
other things popping up?
Yeah, the bear is still the king. If you know, I always say if what you're selling is an emoji, you know, so teddy bears have two emojis, so that should tell you something. We focus a lot on the bears. We focus on Valentine's. We do get a smattering of different animals like, you know, lions, tigers, and things like that. What we don't get into is all the zoo animals and the aquarium animals. There's actually big money in that because zoos and aquariums get thousands upon thousands of people. And I've taken my kids to zoos and aquariums, and every time we go, they want a stuffed animal. I'm like, don't forget your dad owns a stuffed
Because you
animal. Come
know how
here.
much it costs to really
Yeah, and they're
make it,
like,
and they're
but
selling
dad,
it
you
for
don't.
30 bucks.
Yeah, it's like, but dad, you don't have a manta ray. I'm like, I'll get you a manta ray. I know I could get a case of manta rays for cheaper than one product that they sell. So that's how it goes. But
That's funny.
and same thing with state fairs, we don't do that. And we even have there's like a company called Michaels which buys indirectly from us, and they buy like the mascot heads for decorating homecoming moms, and we just sell to a distributor who then sells to Michaels, and they've come directly to us, and we're like, you know what, we'd rather just give it to these people. They pay us right away. They don't have to mess around with any of the paperwork. We've seen your terms. And so we've turned down a lot of business just because it was like, yeah, maybe that'll bring us more money, but I want to go home at 5. I don't want to have to worry about this deal falling through, I don't want to have to work on weekends or travel so much because I'm trying to raise a family. And you know, they're already 9 and 6, and before I know it, they'll be, 24 and 18. So I just want to spend as much time as possible with them. I bring them up here whenever possible, and they sometimes model for me. So I try to balance work and life pretty well.
That's great. Kudos to you for doing that. Mine are a little older, 17 and 20, and I've always tried to do that too. To make sure that, because nobody's going to thank you at the end, if you worked 80-hour
Yeah,
weeks and
like they said,
don't have any kids.
no one on their deathbed said, "I wish I spent more time at the office."
Yeah, exactly.
So.
So, congrats on all the progress. If we go back a little in time, can you pinpoint a couple of times where you ran into some obstacles or there was some real challenges and talk about what happened and how you guys approached it?
Yeah, I would say we plateaued. I remember it was quite a while ago. It was very, maybe we made $250,000 in 1 year, and slowly but steady over a course of 4 or 5 years, we got it up to $1 million in sales. And we all treated ourselves to a steak dinner. And my dad and uncle were, they actually took out a loan, not so much for the business, but to pay their health insurance because they were too young for Medicare, but too old to stay healthy. And so they were happy to be able to pay off that note, and we made the million, but it seemed like we could never really get above 1 million. And we tried, it just seemed like we were just keeping up with attrition. We would gain new customers, we would lose some. Either we didn't contact them soon, often enough, or they went out of business, what have you. And so it wasn't until we switched over to Shopify when we were able to integrate that information into at the time MailChimp. And we just started to do those flows where it's like, if you place an order, you get a nice little email from me, you get a follow-up and all that. And then MailChimp and Shopify had a divorce, and so we switched over to Klaviyo. And at first we're like, oh dang it, Shopify. But then after we saw how well Klaviyo worked, we're like, oh, thank you, Shopify, for pushing us into Klaviyo. And then I just got really fixated on coming up with flows and coming up with all the emails that go out to customers. One time, a customer emailed us and said, "Hey, I just want to say you guys have the best customer service I've ever had. We love everything that you do, the way you communicate." And I went to go, before I thanked them, I checked to see how long they've been a customer, and they had just placed their order a day or two ago. Their order hadn't even arrived. I was like, okay, I know I did well. If I'm able to become their favorite vendor before they even get their product, then I know I'm doing well. And
So
so
have
we
you been
just,
able to, or the specific performance metrics that you've been looking at that you can tell that Klaviyo and these I guess retention processes are working? Are you seeing customer lifetime value go up or
yeah, for
repeat
sure.
buys and
Absolutely. And sometimes we'll get a new unicorn in. And so we'll just make a segment of everyone who's ever bought a unicorn and just do a quick email to them. They don't know that I'm targeting them, but they're like, oh, a unicorn. I could always use a unicorn. But generally speaking, we have our lead magnet, which is you sign up for this email, you get $30 off your first order. And that has been a big win for us. It gets people to try us out, they place a small order. They get the follow-up emails, they get their order within days, not weeks. And we try to, sell products that people would want to buy again. And and then they get follow-up emails. We try to keep it fresh. They always say, how often should you email customers? And the answer is as often as you can get away with it, or as often as you can, which means you have to think about what you're sending. Is it valuable? So like if I emailed the grandparents pictures of our kids once or twice a day, they would say that's not enough. We need more pictures of those babies. But sometimes I'll sign up for Williams Sonoma. I'll buy something from there. I'll say, yeah, I'll accept. I'll see your emails. It's like twice a day. I was like, how many pans and pots do I need? So I just shut it off because they have absolutely no control. So what we do is we try to email them once a week, and we have a plush of the month where we put them up. product on special, and it might be 10 or 20% off. And so people always look at that. We have a monthly winner. So if you're a newsletter subscriber, we pick one and send you off a case of teddy bears or what have you. And then so people see that item, and then they also see the one that's coming next month. And we always name the customers so they know we're not just, you know, making it up as we go along. And then we do a lot of work with charities and such. And so we actually go out on location and film them. I bring a professional film crew and film them. And so I have about six or seven of those under my belt that we just cycle through, and we're always adding new ones. It might be someone who's helping out breast cancer survivors, or it's a motorcycle gang that are giving out teddy bears to fire stations, or it might be a customer who helps children with scoliosis cope with their childhood disease. And so it's very heartfelt, and we put the focus on them. We don't try to be the main character. They're the main character. We're the Obi-Wan Kenobi. We're the Yoda. They're always the Luke Skywalker, and they love it. We love it. Our customers like it. So we try to, you know, do that. And then our usual, hey, new items, it's coming this way. People, you know, they always say in marketing, the two most effective words are new and free.
Yeah.
And so anytime you can do that, we try to put an email out, and yeah, we see what the open rate is. And we try to also cull the list, because Klaviyo charges per recipient. And so if you haven't opened up an email in a while, we not only is it costing us money, but the open rate, as you may know, your open rate, how it goes into the inbox is determined by the open rate. And so Gmail knows how many people are opening up your email. And if hardly anyone is opening up your email, it might go to spam. So we try to make it really good and say, all right, we want to try to keep our list at around 12,000 and just slowly build up. And then when it gets a little big, we kind of take a second look at the parameters and then cut away if needed.
And it sounds like you are personally heavily involved in all this. I know a lot of startups at some point in time, they hire agencies, but you're doing all this yourself?
Yeah, with the emails, we have a marketing advisor who gives us our weekly numbers. I bounce ideas off him, and he basically takes my voice and turns it into the weekly emails. It's at this point, it's just a template. Every once in a while, I'll come in once or twice, you know, every couple of years and say, okay, let's remodel our templates here to make them a little bit more fresh and whatnot, and A/B test those. And so we have him, and then we recently hired a company that is doing Facebook and Instagram advertising.
Okay.
And we're about 5 months into that contract, and we'll see how it ends at the end of the year. I think they're just now figuring out how to get our products to the right people, or our message to the right people, as opposed to, you know, it's one thing to sell a teddy bear to anyone who might want one, but it's another thing to sell it to businesses that might be able to resell them. So that's a tough one. It's not like Facebook has a parameter set for that.
Yeah, it's tricky. It's like our company Gemba, we help companies with product development, but it's a very specific type of product development, right? For consumer products and certain product categories. And it's hard, you know, when you do advertising on Google, for example, there's a lot of people searching for product development that's looking for software product development, or they're students learning about product development. So it's mastering that kind of long tail advertising, or figuring out exactly how to target the customers that are right for you, it can be tricky.
Yeah, who are willing to, you know, pay the premium, and you don't want to just be beset with small time customers who have no real ambition to follow through, that kind of thing. Yeah. And same thing with us, we do custom crafted toys, you know, if you want to get a special toy done. But people, I always tell people, hey, it's a 3,600 piece minimum. Your average price per piece is $5 a piece. So if you want to spend 12 grand, we'll be happy to help you. But I'm not going to go through the trouble of making them 600 pieces, make a couple thousand dollars. It's way too much involved with that. So we don't get many of those, but we do have it available on our website, because if we didn't, people would call all the time saying, hey, can you make my own little plush toy for me? And sometimes I try to talk them out of it. I'm like, hey, you're better off buying a bear and putting your children's books message on the bear rather than crafting it. One time someone called me up and says, hey, Do you buy plush? I have a lot of extra Labradors from a children's book that didn't do too well. The thing is that the Labrador, it's about a three-legged Labrador. So all my Labradors have three legs. I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry, but I can't help you with your, maybe if you, we buy them and take off,
Maybe you
the
create a new
legs and
version of the
just,
children's book about a
yeah.
three-legged Labrador, and you
Yeah,
could
and
be
that's what you already
huge
did.
success.
I was thinking, yeah, we could cut off, the three legs and attach them one at a time and make four-legged Labradors, but I passed on that one. Yeah.
That's wise. So you've been doing this for a little over 20 years, is that right? What
That's right.
what's ahead? What do you see in the future? Are you gonna pass this on to your kids, or do you gonna
Gosh,
sell
I
the
don't know.
business sometime in the future, or what are your plans for the long term?
Well, I had to have it evaluated because my uncle wanted to retire and we had everything all ready to go. And then the tariffs hit. And so the tariffs are like, all right, whatever our company was valued at last May, it's not worth that now until we get some clear skies on this. So we're just kind of biding our time because it goes up, then it goes down. Then the Supreme Court says, or some appeals court said, we're vacating the tariffs. And then you have toy companies who are suing. I'm like, so what we did, just like we did in COVID, we're like, all right, this isn't going to go away. Let's buy as many plush toys as we can, pack the warehouse full of pre-tariff goods. And then we would negotiate with what's coming. And there was like a container we needed to get in June because we had some customers who need it for July. And we're like, we're going to have to bite the bullet and maybe the tariffs will go down, maybe it'll go up. And even if we wait for the tariffs to hit rock bottom, what's going to happen is that there's going to be a huge demand on containers, on ships. And so a container that might cost $5,000 to get delivered might cost 20 or 25,000. So you do the math and you realize, okay, let's just get our supplier to lower the price a little bit and we'll pay the tariff and we'll pay a cheaper freight rate. So that's what we did. And maybe by the time it rolls in next week, the administration might say, you know what? Tariffs were a bad idea. I was just seeing how you guys thought about it. We're going back to zero tariffs. So who knows? But the big idea is eventually my uncle will retire and it'll just be just me. Who knows with my graphic novel, if it becomes a thing, then I'll be able to split my time. But I've always designed the company to where it needs as little input as me on possible on a day-to-day. I think it's unhealthy to like pack your own boxes and create your own labels and all that. You want to focus on the high level stuff. So even our busiest month of the year, which was is January, I went off to a retreat in the Canary Islands because I knew that our staff could handle the increased, business kind of thing. And yeah, if someone came and made me an offer, I would listen, but it'd have to be a pretty big number because it is like the goose that laid the golden egg. We have tons of customers. We know what products to buy. We get them in and we turn it into money. So it'd be a very foolish thing to sell for a low price. And it's something, I'm only 48, so I'll just keep it going for a while and see what happens. I don't plan on bringing on other products, like turning it into a gift wholesale company where we have increasing the number of products we have by tenfold. Let someone else do that. There's plenty of companies that that do that, like Burton and Burton, and that are they just sell everything from teddy bears to little boxes to trinkets and that kind of thing. It's just not something I want to get involved in. I'd rather make less money than to try to make more money and make my work week go from, 40 hours to like 80.
And there's always risk adding new products. You don't know if you're going to be able to get the same profitability. Would you mind
Yeah.
sharing where you are revenue wise? Or you don't have to if you don't feel
Yeah,
comfortable.
it's been circling around 5 million a year. My goal is to get up to about 5 million and keep it that way. And I hear that's like a good number, maybe more. You have to earn more now with inflation, but we have a good what is the word? Markup, it's not super competitive, so we can if we can sell a product, if it doesn't sell, we can lower it pretty significantly and not like eat it. And we do try different, you're asking about teddy bears versus we'll try like axolotls and we'll try what are they called? There's like the Scottish cow, a Highlands cow that we'll try. It's going big. And what we've learned is that what may be going big for some companies, it doesn't go big for us. The avatar for our customer is, a conservative female sole proprietor in the Midwest or in the South, they don't know what an axolotl is. They don't know what all the trending stuff is. And that we just kind of stick with that, where we don't do anything crazy with social media. We promote the federal holidays and all that, and we just kind of keep it. We're not trying to, like, you know, become a political where we take risk with our messaging. I'm like, no, just do that on your spare time, and we'll just, we sell teddy bears and stuffed animals to anybody who wants them. That's our goal.
Yeah. Great. Well, we're running out of time. Two questions. If people want to find you, if they want to learn more about you, where should they go?
Yeah, well, you can always go to plushandarush.com. And if you send an email, I generally, you know, get them. Our 800 number is on there. I'm always happy to talk to people and, you know, email them anything about plush toys to entrepreneurship to even writing your own book, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, great. So, and if you were to give any advice to budding entrepreneurs, folks that are early in their journey and, you know, just getting started, what advice would you give them after more than 20 years in business?
Yeah, I would say, you know, start small and try to find the right channel for your business. So I have a nephew-in-law who started a soap company, and he's picked my brain a little bit. And I was like, well, don't try to get into Target and all these things, but maybe take it to farmers markets, take it to specialty Austin shops where they, you know, buy local brands and whatnot. And just keep, you know, keep good numbers and make sure that you're not going broke doing this thing. You know, they always say, like, pay yourself first, make money off it. And don't be afraid to say this isn't working out and try what you've learned on something new. Because, you know, every time you fail, it's worth it if you learn something. So if you can, what they call it, like, I've learned it from a really great book. That would be something I recommend. It's called Personal MBA. It's a great business book. Basically, the guy read about 150 business books and condensed all the information into one volume. And one of the main things in there was called the minimum viable product. So if you were, like, going to start a yoga studio, what you would do is send out a postcard to everyone in a particular zip code that you're looking to target. And you put on something on there, like, if you sign up now, you'll get a, you know, money off the first year. Here's what it looks like. Here's what we're teaching. And then based on your responses, you'll learn, okay, it sounds like most of the people who are responding are in this one particular zip code in this particular block. So I'll build my studio here. And then even the guy who started Zappos, he started by going into a Payless shoe store and getting permission to take photos of the shoes. And he said, anytime I sell one of your shoes, I'll come and buy it from you guys. And they're like, sure, you can take pictures. So he literally had no inventory. He just posted what they had at Payless. And then he learned how to do it. And then eventually he started his own warehouse, and then eventually got bought by Amazon for, you know, 1 billion or 2 billion. But it all started, he didn't start off with this giant warehouse full of every shoe can think of. He started small. So that's what I would try to do, is start off small and see what works. And if it doesn't work, try something else.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. The key is to get started, right? I think a lot of people are stuck not, you know, getting the first step. They don't think they know enough. They don't have everything figured out. And I agree with you 100%. Just start doing something. Take the first small step towards it and learn, because you're going to learn a lot as soon as you get out there.
Yeah, I had someone call me and had this great idea for a plush product, and thought about what I thought. I was like, well, what we do is we're not going to market it for you, but we'll create the product, give it to you, and then you sell. He's like, well, really, I'm more of an idea man. I just want to give you my ideas and get paid for them. I'm like, yeah, the world is full of idea men and women. So it's better if you just go ahead and try it. Yeah. So yeah, you'll hear about that. It's like you telling your doctor, I've been thinking about walking more. And the doctor will say, well, you know what's better than thinking about walking is actually walking. Yeah. You know, go ahead and do the work.
Yeah. Well, we'll end on that note. Todd, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Congrats on building a a great business and a great balance between the business and your life. Thanks for taking the time and
Yeah,
best of
thanks,
luck.
Hendrik. Appreciate it.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. Would love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your post and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a ton to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.